Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Marshall Goldsmith, author of Succession. Are you ready? Hi, I'm Nathan Ives, and I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Marshall Goldsmith, author of Succession. Are you ready? The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag posts found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Marshall Goldsmith, co-founder of Marshall Goldsmith Partners, shares with us his insights on the personal issues that arise during executive succession and how to overcome them, achieving a positive outcome for the departing leader, the successor, and the organization. So now, without any further delay, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Marshall Goldsmith, author of Succession, Are You Ready?, and co-founder of Marshall Goldsmith Partners, an executive coaching firm dedicated to developing business leaders. Dr. Goldsmith is recognized as a leading authority in helping leaders achieve positive, lasting behavioral change for themselves, their people, and their teams. He has coached scores of top executives in major corporations and written the number one bestseller, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. In 2006, Alliant International University recognized Dr. Goldsmith's achievements by naming its School of Business and Organizational Psychology the Marshall Goldsmith School of Management. Marshall, welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Happy to be here.
It is great to have you here. I have been looking forward to being able to talk to you for weeks, and I absolutely loved your book, which in light of all the CEO challenges we see in the news today, is certainly timely and I think invaluable for a lot of the leaders out there looking to make the transition out of that chief executive chair.
Yes.
But Marshall, before we begin, as I read Succession, which is a memo to CEOs, the lessons and insights that you provided seem to me to also be applicable to organizational leading executives and senior managers. And I was thinking of like the heads of business units of maybe large corporations. I was wondering if that impression was correct. And if so, if there were any different things that those somewhat lower positions needed to do to augment the recommendations you made in the book.
I think number one, your perception is completely correct. And number two, when you're at a different level in the organization than the top, sometimes the level of complexity is even higher because then you're dealing with multiple levels up. And mm-hmm. if you're in the middle, you could be dealing with multiple levels up and down as the key stakeholders in the succession process. One other group that I think is probably, and I've gotten a lot of feedback since the book was published on this, mm-hmm. one other group that I think is even more connected to everything in the book would be entrepreneurs, and especially founders of entrepreneurial businesses, because these people are completely ego-identified with what they're doing.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, their job is not just a job. Their job is my identity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And I guess I see that in some of the entrepreneurs I've worked with in the past is – yeah, they are their business. It's almost one of the same.
And by the way, letting go is the biggest challenge they face as their business grows.
Okay. All right. Well, Marshall, I was wondering to set the framework for our listeners, if you could describe for us what you see as being a successful transition.
I think a successful transition occurs when both the incumbent and the successor, along a course with the organization, mm-hmm. end up with a positive experience. Let me briefly describe that.
Okay.
First, for the incumbent. The incumbent leaves typically with some place to go. The incumbent leaves with the rest of their life that looks positive and upbeat, and actually the incumbent is looking forward to walking out the door as opposed to sitting there at 5:30 barking orders and sending out emails.
Okay.
So this is a situation where the incumbent leaves on a positive note. The incumbent feels good about succession, good about the successor, good about the future of the organization. It's a situation where the successor is grateful for the job, mm-hmm. feels positive about the incumbent, feels he or she can call the incumbent at any time and get advice to, you know, help the early years in the business.
Sure.
Doesn't feel that they have to do it, but feels that they can do it. And then obviously it's a situation where the environment doesn't miss a beat. The organization continues. People work together smoothly. Now, again, this is the theoretical and desired option. You're never going to have all of these things happen perfectly.
Sure.
This is not real. The idea is you just try to maximize this as much as you can and try to end up with a situation that is as close as possible to this desired option.
Okay. Yeah, and this seems to me to be so much of the focus of your book. I guess when I've thought of succession in the past, it's always about dollar figures and numbers and, hey, can the new guy hit the quarterly targets? But I've never thought of it dealing with those softer personal issues of, like you said, is the incoming successor comfortable that they can call the outgoing person? And does the outgoing person have something to go do after they leave the job? So I really valued that perspective in succession. That kind of leads me to my next question. When I look at CEOs that I particularly admire, I consider them to be very emotionally intelligent and very capable of dealing with kind of the soft issues that come up on a day-to-day basis. But it seems that executives can struggle, though, with those same soft issues when it comes to dealing with their own succession and departure. I was wondering if you could share some insights as to why they tend to have that particular struggle in this case.
Well, one of the things I talk about that's unique is succession is a sudden event, mm-hmm. and departure is a sudden event. Growth is an incremental event. So this is a very different dynamic. The difference between an incremental event and a sudden event is huge. Let's take a simple topic of money.
Okay.
Well, money is something that you gradually get more and more of, typically at this level, or power. Over the years, power is even a better example. They get more and more power, but their power increases gradually.
Mm-hmm.
You start out as an operational level person without a great deal of power. You move into a position of first-line manager, you have a little bit more, and then over the years you gradually accumulate more and more and more and more and more until one day you're a CEO, you have huge amounts of power.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then one day you wake up. This power has accumulated gradually over a career of perhaps, I don't know, 30, 40 years. Then one day you wake up, and guess what? Boom. Power gone. It just, it's like falling off a cliff. So this sudden transition can be very disconcerting, and it is very hard to let go. If you read a history book, mm-hmm. is there anything in the history of the world that indicates, and most of the powerful figures in the world have been old men, is there anything in the history of the world that indicates it's easy for old men to let go of status, money, and power? I never really read that book. And when the time comes to let go, some handle it with great grace and dignity, and some, obviously, as I describe in my book, don't handle it with great grace and dignity at all. And these could be people who are otherwise excellent leaders. There's another dynamic here that's quite different. When you're talking about emotional intelligence, you're talking about, especially at the CEO level, me dealing with them. Well,
okay.
this is me dealing with me.
Okay.
Very different dynamic. This is really not just interpersonal, that's part of it, but a deeper part of it is often intrapersonal. It's me dealing with me, me dealing with my own fears, me dealing with the trauma of not knowing what's going to happen next, me dealing with my own worries. And it's fascinating because, as I mentioned in the book, I've had these sessions at my home with executives three times where they all talk about what am I going to do with the rest of my life. And it's amazing because they have no one to talk to.
Okay.
And when I say they have no one to talk to professionally, they shouldn't talk about these things publicly. They can't get up and share their existential angst with the world.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an operational level person in a company, you can sit there and talk about, I don't know if I should stay here another 5 years, or I'm not sure. The reality is nobody in the stock world is going to care. His stock's not going to go up $1 or down $1 because you have this discussion. If you're the CEO, billions of dollars are impacted. Everybody cares. And you have to be incredibly sensitive about the way you discuss these things, not because you're closed, but because you're professional. It's just part of being a professional at that level. And so you have to be real careful about what you're saying. And again, that makes the problem even bigger because in some sense, you have no one to talk to.
Okay. Kind of back to the axiom, it's kind of lonely at the top.
It is lonely at the top. And that's part of the price you pay.
Yeah.
It's part of the price you pay for being a CEO. One example I mention in the book is one really highly respected CEO I work with, and I'm coaching this person's future CEO. I mean, the future CEO, I'm going through coaching, and the future CEO is going, well, does this coaching mean I have to watch what I say and how I act in every meeting for the rest of my career? And the present CEO says, welcome to my world.
Yeah.
That is exactly what it means. If you want to be a great CEO, you have to watch what you say and how you act in every meeting for the rest of your career. Everyone in that room is staring at your face. You are the visible representative of the company.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you say can go in the newspaper. It can go on the internet. You have to be just incredibly careful about what you say, how you look, how you act in every meeting. That is part of your job, and that's part of the job of being a leader at this level. And it's a tough responsibility.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of, again, another admired CEO of a company I worked with. He became CEO suddenly. The board decided it was time for the existing CEO to depart, and he was the number two guy and moved up. And one of the first comments he made about 2 to 3 weeks into the job to me was, you know, he said, I had shared a thought with somebody, just some random rough thought of, gee, I wonder if we should get into doing some obscure particular item. And the next thing you know, we as an organization had a whole project team and we're spending a lot of money around investigating, should we do this particular activity?
Right.
And yeah, he said, my world has suddenly changed. He says, I used to be able to think out loud to people and bounce ideas off of them. He says, now I bounce an idea off of someone. Well, it doesn't bounce back. It creates whole new organizations and funding and the like. And he was amazed at just the difference in moving from the number two spot to the number one spot.
It's a huge difference.
Yeah.
One of the CEOs I work with recently retired. He's a great guy, J.P. Garnier. He was CEO of a huge drug company, GlaxoSmithKline. And J.P. once told me, asked him, what'd you learn about leadership as a CEO? He said, I learned a very hard lesson. As a CEO, he said, my suggestions become orders. He said, if they're smart, they're orders, and if they're stupid, they're orders. If I want them to be orders, they are orders. If I do not want them to be orders, they are orders anyway. My suggestions become orders. And I asked him, what did you learn from me when I was your coach that helped you? He said, one lesson that he learned that really helped him the most is just before speaking to stop and breathe and ask himself, is it worth it? And he said about half the time he'd decide, am I right? Maybe. Is it worth it? No. Because he realized that once he made that suggestion, it was an order. I have a very funny story. One of my clients was a great man, John Clendenin. He was CEO of Bell South Company years ago. And It was back before they had PCs and everybody had computers, and he was just, and they had, and everybody had cell phones. He's driving home with his wife, and I'm making the story a little long, but it'll be close. Yeah. He's driving home with his wife, and they pass a phone booth. And he just says, well, I wonder how much money we make on that phone booth. He didn't really care. He just curious his wife talking about it. And he goes back to the office, talks to an operational level person, and says, I'm curious, how much money do we make on the phone booth? Not a big deal. You don't have to write it up. Just put it on a scrap of paper and send it to me.
Yeah.
The operational level person starts doing this. The person's boss walks by and sees it and goes, what's that? Well, this is for Mr. Clendenin. You can't send a scrap of paper to him. I've got to get my boss involved. And then they get into and the boss's boss. And then they start doing a study of how the phone booth compares to other phone booths in the district and the region. A month later, they bring in this huge report in his office and says, here's the phone booth study you requested.
Wow.
He has no idea what they're even talking about, of course. He's forgotten the entire event. He figures if he keeps talking long enough, it'll all come back to him.
Yeah.
Finally, says, I have no idea what you're talking about. They, you know, everybody then goes back to the bottom. The guy says, look, he just wanted to know how much they made in one phone booth. John Clendenin's estimate was that one question he asked cost the company $1 million.
Wow.
And that was 20 years ago. It was 20 years ago. Cost the company $1 million in wasted time and energy. Well, that's the learning point at this level. You've got to be real careful. Because in this case, even what seemed to be an innocent question turned into an avalanche of activity.
Wow. That is absolutely incredible. That is incredible. Marshall, since we've been talking about power and the power of the CEO, and of course that they lose that power when they step out of that role, I was wondering, is there anything that the departing CEO can do to prepare themselves for that loss of authority in making this transition?
Well, I think the first suggestion I have is, well, look into your final year or so is engaged in three activities. One is running the company. Two is developing your successor. And three is finding something else to do with the rest of your life, what I call creating a great rest of your life.
Yeah.
I think the best thing they can do is really focus on that. And a lot of people don't understand the term power because they have sort of a negative social connotation. When I talk about power, I'm not talking about being evil or manipulative. Power can be defined as influence potential. And CEOs have incredible potential to influence the behavior of others and to influence billions of dollars and to influence the world. And when you leave that job, you often lose that type of power. Well, I think it's very important to realize, to ask yourself a question, do you want to lose that kind of power? Some of them, when they get near the end, decide they really don't want to give it up, and then you end up with this mess of them changing their mind and all kinds of problems. And then the ones that are most effective, though, are the ones that do find something else to do that is meaningful and worthwhile. They go to another organization. They work in a nonprofit. They are doing something where they're making a positive difference. So in preparing for this transition, the three key factors that I find to make a successful transition are meaning. They're going to have to do something that provides meaning in their lives because their job as a CEO is highly meaningful. Contribution. They need to do something that feels like they're making a contribution to the world because usually that's what they're so most proud of about being a CEO is the people they can help. And then the final one is happiness. They need to do something that makes them happy because if they're not going to be happy playing bad golf with old men at the country club, sitting around eating chicken salad sandwiches and talking about who they used to be for 20 years.
Sure.
That just doesn't work out. So they need to find something where they find meaning, contribution, and happiness. And playing bad golf doesn't really provide a whole lot of meaning, not much contribution, and in the end, not much happiness.
All right. Marshall, you had mentioned as part of the transition process, coaching the successor. I was wondering if there were any unique challenges if, say, you had an active board that, I don't know, was maybe a little heavy-handed on the selection process and actually asserted itself in the selection that maybe the CEO wasn't as comfortable or didn't prefer that particular choice of successors and how they should deal with that in the coaching process?
Well, in reality, the board is going to make the final decision.
Mm-hmm.
And the CEO usually does have veto power, though.
Okay.
If the CEO, you know, if it's a positive scenario. Now, my book, I talk about succession in a positive vein. That is, the CEO has earned the right to leave on his or her terms.
Yes.
This obviously is not always the situation.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, the CEO doesn't earn the right to leave on his or her terms or is not given this privilege. In the situation where the board intervenes, often it is less than positive. Because if things are going well, the board is seldom going to really take on the CEO because they're basically happy. When things
sure.
aren't going so well, the board may intervene. Then mm-hmm. the CEO has to realize the ultimate decision is going to be made not by the CEO, but by the board.
Mm-hmm.
And it is to the best interest of the CEO and to the board and to the successor to create a great succession process anyway. And in this case, the best thing the CEO can do is swallow some of their pride and swallow
okay.
some ego and sit there and say, this is going to be the successor of the organization. This may not be the person I would have chosen, but
mm-hmm.
this is the person the board is going to choose. And I'm going to do my best to help this person be a winner. Because it's in nobody's best interest for this person to fail.
Marshall, and keeping kind of on this line of thought, we see so many times in the media lately that CEOs come from outside the company. Is
yes.
there any special coaching then that the current CEO should give an outsider coming in, and on the same vein, any special coaching he or she should give their existing executive team in how to deal with this outsider coming in to take the reins?
I think the coaching process I described works very well in either situation.
Okay.
And in this process, what would happen is the incumbent CEO, if the successor is coming in from the outside, the question is the incumbent still there?
Mm-hmm.
Assume, number one, the incumbent is still there, and this person will be a successor for, say, a year or two before they take over. In that case, very important to have one-on-one dialogues with each of the key stakeholders.
Okay.
And really, I suggest asking each stakeholder to do four things.
Okay.
One is to be open-minded and let go of past preconceptions. Really focus on the future with this person and not the past or anger or bitterness. Number two is to be positive and supportive to this person, not cynical, negative, or sarcastic. Then number three is be honest about how this person can help. And then number four, work in an area where not only do you expect this person to go out of his or her way to try to build relationships with you,
mm-hmm.
but you also go out of your way to try to build positive rapport with this person. So make it a two-way street where both parties are really trying to help each other. Then I would pretty quickly get this person, the future CEO, in the habit of talking to each of the key stakeholders about here's who I am, here's what I've done, here's my background. And once they begin to get some experience, give me ideas on what's going well and give me some ideas on changes I can make to ensure that we have a great relationship moving forward.
Okay. All right. Now, as we've been talking about CEOs and their turnovers, I guess the headlines keep coming to mind. When you were speaking, for instance, about a CEO finding something meaningful to do and contribute to the world after their departure, the first person that came to mind was Bill Gates and the Bill Gates Foundation.
Right.
And how meaningful and impactful that is. I was wondering if you had any publicly visible examples of successful transitions that might be illustrative for our listeners that they can relate to that or do some follow-up research that they see, again, more publicly in the media.
Well, one gentleman, this wasn't a CEO, but close to it at Goldman Sachs, his name was Mark Terzic. And Mark is a good friend of mine and, you know, came to my house, talked about life. And Mark is now the CEO of a very large, important organization called the Nature Conservancy.
Sure.
Nature Conservancy is probably the largest landholder in the world.
Oh.
And Mark is really focused on the environment, trying to do what he can to make a positive difference on the environment. He works very hard. And I think he's real happy in his transition. Mm-hmm. So he would be a good case study of a person like Bill Gates. And I think, by the way, people like this should be applauded.
Sure.
I mean, what they're doing is fantastic. I mean, I think what Bill Gates is doing is fantastic. Mm-hmm. What Mark is doing is fantastic. These are people that don't have to work, but are really going out of their way to try to make the world a better place. And to me, these people are heroes. And by the way, it doesn't have to be at the CEO level. It could be at any level. It could be a first-line manager who's going out of his way to his or help after they leave to go out and help the boys' club or the girls' club. It could be anyone at any level. You don't have to be a Bill Gates. It could be anyone at any level going out of their way to do good for others. And I think these people should be applauded at all levels.
Oh, sure. And as you mentioned that, the first thing that came to mind, just a personal experience, was my alma mater for my MBA, which was Kennesaw State University, has a program where they can bring in business executives or a number of those executives taking their MBA courses, and they help local individuals trying to start up businesses that are, you know, underprivileged. And, sure. You know, these people make contributions. They help launch what I think is part of what makes America great, this entrepreneurial spirit, and give folks that otherwise wouldn't have that opportunity the opportunity to be successful in business.
And one of the greatest leaders I ever met is Betty, who's the former president of your organization.
Sure, sure.
Wonderful woman. I mean, that does everything you talk about, created a great university, and mm-hmm. she really built that university up in a positive way. And, you know, just gone out of her way to help the community. I haven't seen her for a while, but I really am a great fan of hers.
Oh, she is absolutely a wonderful person. I got to meet her. I actually got my MBA while she was president of the university. And, of course, now they have a whole program around business ethics and moral leadership that is named in her honor. So just a wonderful person. And you're right, she did an outstanding work there at the university and the community to really help both be very prosperous.
So I think she's a great example of a person who was a highly accomplished professional and is still out there doing good deeds to help make the world better.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, absolutely.
Marshall, let me mention one other one. His name is
sure.
Joe Scarlett. Joe is CEO of the Tractor Supply Company.
Oh, and sure.
And Joe's a great guy, and Tractor Supply Company is a very successful organization. And Joe is now one of the real, I think, happy and fulfilled former CEOs I know. He is working to develop leaders, the Scarlett Leadership Institute in the Tennessee area where he lives and then throughout the Southeast. And mm-hmm. he's trying to help young people be better leaders. And, yeah, he works hard at it. He's happy, and his wife seems to be really enjoying themselves. I would say he gets an A in terms of someone who has made a successful transition from being a CEO to really going out there and helping others. And he's found happiness and meaning. He's making a contribution. So he's another one I just give very high marks to.
Oh, excellent. Marshall, I did want to ask you one more item before we close, and I could go on and on and on today. But what I wanted to ask you about was your website, which is yes. www.marshallgoldsmithlibrary.com, which I've been to several times, and it's just a phenomenal resource for business leaders at all levels. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about your website and the things people can find while they're there.
Well, I'm a Buddhist, and basically the attitude I have is to give away as much as I can. We're all going to die anyway, so might as well do some good here. And my website is my hobby. I have hundreds of articles, videos, audios, just many resources on the website. And what's nice about it is any of your listeners can copy, share, download, duplicate, use in their charity, use in church, use with friends, use any of my material in any way you wish. Many things are on Word documents. I've had a lot of materials have been translated by people, used mm-hmm. in different organizations. If you want to tailor it a little bit to your own organization, feel free. So this is just one of the things I try to do to maybe help the world be a little better is to give everything away. And I never liked it when people would, you know, you go to a class and everything says do not copy, do not share, do not duplicate. And I always found that to be a little stingy. So, I like to copy, share. You can copy, share, duplicate, use all my material any way you want to. And if it provides benefit to anybody, that makes me feel great. One thing would make me be happy is if you do it and it works and you have a positive experience, just send me an email and tell me what happened. I love to hear these nice positive stories.
Great, great. That is outstanding. And we'll, of course, provide a link to Marshall Goldsmith Library that will accompany the podcast on the Strategy Driven website, too, just to help our listeners get there a little quicker.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, Marshall, I wanted to thank you not only for sharing your time, but your phenomenal insights on effective succession with us today. I really enjoyed your book, Succession, Are You Ready? Not only for the insights that you shared, but the stories that you shared along the way of the top executives that illustrated their challenges and struggles, what they did to overcome them, and then of course the outcomes. And I'd highly recommend, especially to our listeners who are executives and senior managers that are going to be going forward and transitioning and going through a succession process, to pick up a copy for themselves and to get the tremendous benefit out of it that I have. So thank you again for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for this kind invitation.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Marshall Goldsmith for being with us today and sharing his insights on executive succession. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Marshall Goldsmith and Succession, Are You Ready? At www.marshallgoldsmithlibrary.com. Until next time, so long.